Joy 94.9.
Orange Ribbon Joycast.
Sponsored by MyMac.
The best Apple computer, iPod and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.
Welcome to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9. Tonight with just me, Alan Smales. One of tonight's guests has been HIV positive for 14 years. He later got involved in HIV politics and support groups and then later stood twice as an openly gay candidate for local government elections. The second guest in tonight's chat was involved in gay politics at university, has disrupted services at a Roman Catholic cathedral and in full leather gear chained himself to the front of Hong Kong Central Police Station. But both guys, although considered radical gay activists in Hong Kong, have had a long-held dream. We'll talk about that in tonight's discussion. So, I've got another challenging discussion with Ken and Tommy coming up tonight here on Orange Ribbon. Stay with me for the next hour here on Joy 94.9. From the second album by Super Junior, the group from South Korea, and that opens our program tonight. I'm Alan Smales and you're listening to Orange Ribbon. As regular listeners will know, I spent most of August in Hong Kong again, and while I was there, I recorded two separate interviews. The first of those I presented here on Orange Ribbon just 3 weeks ago. And tonight I present the second of those interviews. In Hong Kong, Ken Jai and Tommy Jai are two well-known, albeit somewhat radical, gay activists who are dedicated to trying to make life somewhat easier for the LGBTIQ community there. They've developed high public profiles as a result of their activism, radical activism that has ranged from protesting inside the Roman Catholic Cathedral about the church's attitude to gay marriage to dressing up in leather gear and being chained in to the front of Hong Kong Central Police Station to protest against the police raid of a BDSM club. Ken also became the first publicly outed HIV-positive gay man in Hong Kong and then later went on to twice stand as a candidate in local government elections. But their greatest dream and success has been to open a rainbow community centre where gays and lesbians, whether out or not, can safely congregate to share experiences, to obtain information and advice, and to be the core or centre of a LGBTIQ community in Hong Kong. They were finally able to open a rainbow community centre in Mong Kok on the Kowloon side in 2000, but that centre struggled for ongoing funds and reluctantly closed after about 12 months. It was to be several years later, in fact in 2007, that they were once again able to reopen a new rainbow centre, this time a little further down Nathan Road in Jordan. But it still struggles for funding, leading to ongoing uncertainty about its future. So I began our chat by asking Tommy a little about how Rainbow Hong Kong and the Rainbow Centre originally started.
Three of us with Justin that we got together, and initially we wanted to do something, and which is including an idea of LGBT community center. But we were young and poor, so we started with some activities and borrowing some space, just like 2 hours from various organizations. And then we started to come out on the newspapers to advertise and talk about our dreams and beliefs, so getting more people involved. And we are lucky to build the first LGBT community center actually in the whole Asia.
What were the original objectives? I mean, and have those objectives changed over the 9 or 10 years?
We had a special idea that we are not the leaders of the community. Our organization are volunteer-based. So we actually encourage everyone to become a volunteer, and us as the organization officer actually helping the volunteer to realize their dreams. Mm. Of course, we deal with a lot of LGBT issues.
So yeah. we hope beside the gay bar, bathroom, or disco, beside the internet, we create an area, we create a center for the young people, especially.
One more space,
to,
yeah.
To organize some activities, some supporting group for the secondary school student, for the young people. And then they can meet each other and create a supportive networking. So I think not so many people like to go to the bar or sauna every week, but they want to know each other. So we have the when we have the community center for LGBT, then they have one more choice. Yeah.
Now, we'll talk about HIV a little bit later, but it wasn't specifically set up for HIV positive people. It was for any gays or GLBT people who wanted to join in. Now, you had some initial problems in getting funding for this, but you eventually, for the Mongkok Centre, you did get some funding. Where did that funding come from, and how long did it last?
We are LGBT community centre, but we founded on the date of December 1st, which is the World AIDS Day. So from the very beginning, we had the idea that we want to be inclusive with the AIDS projects and ideas and concerning the community.
So did you, are you suggesting that your initial funding came from what?
The first big funding we had was from AIDS Trust Fund, yes.
Okay, now how long did that first centre only lasted, what,
one year?
1 year, was it?
Yeah.
One year.
And then mysteriously, we don't get any more fundings, and we evaluate a lot of the possibility. One of the possibility that we kind of believe is around that time we have a big protest. Protesting the Red Cross guidelines, blood donation guidelines.
Blood donations, yeah.
So we were urging to it for until it happens, and some of the fairly high government officials, especially on the clinic matters, got offended. And then we keep applying for many different fundings, and none of them got through, including the ones that we got. Before.
It must have been difficult for you to have to close it again after you achieved
your
dream.
Yes, it was so painful, and then we had to move to a small, and everyone was like, why is it happen? How is it happen? And we have to ask ourselves a lot that didn't we, whether we have done a good job or so. And then we also got criticized that we shouldn't be too radical about things. So it's that we even been criticized by our own members, so it was a hard time.
So at the same time, some volunteer and members are lost.
Yeah, we lost many of members. Yeah.
Moving ahead a bit, so what did you do? The current centre here in Jordan started only, a year or two ago.
Yeah.
What happened in between times? Was there any part-time centres at all, or there really wasn't anything?
It was.
From this 2 years, the government or the AIDS Trust Fund, they start to have a special fund scheme for the AIDS prevention, especially for the men who have sex with men. So in the past, the government always give the money to the big NGO like AIDS Concern or AIDS Foundation in Hong Kong. So by the special fund scheme, so we have some small NGO or new NGOs or some gay group can apply the funding per year.
Yeah. And then we had the center again, but in between them, it shrank to be quite small sometime. And one of our volunteer staff, Tony, actually is basically his home, but he kept all our materials and documents and archives, so that when we reopened, we had the original libraries.
You've reopened, but it's still a struggle. You're still struggling for funds.
Again,
Where do you get your funding from, and what are you going to do? I mean, I understand even right at the moment it's difficult to keep it going. Where can you get funding, and how do you raise the profile of the group to be able to get extra funds?
Since we insist that we will not give up the advocacy whenever we feel we need to do it, so applying for funding is quite difficult because we consider pretty radical, and fundings and government do not like us. So in the June 4th activities and July 1st, the big parade in Hong Kong, like the democracy parades, we have fundraised. Get some money.
Because in these few years, when we do the gay rights movement, we link up with the democracy movement or social movement in Hong Kong. So we know more and more NGO in Hong Kong. We know more and more people, not just gay or lesbian, but they support us, and then we also support them to fight our rights in Hong Kong. So in Hong Kong every year we have so many big events, so we use this chance for the fundraising, and at the same time we educate the public. Yeah. It is to build our leaflet and let them see, oh, we are here.
Yeah. Certainly funding, I mean, I understand from a volunteer group point of view, we're all in the same boat there. Funding is always a problem. For people who are interested, I'll leave some details about some funding if people want to help. Check out the Orange Ribbon website, the Orange Ribbon blog, I should say, and I'll leave some details there. This is Alan Smales. I'm in Hong Kong, and I'm speaking to Tommy Jai and Ken Jai.
Joy 94.9. Orange Ribbon Joycast, sponsored by MyMac, the best Apple computer, iPod, and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.
Alan Smales in Hong Kong, and I'm speaking to Tommy Jai and Ken Jai here in Hong Kong from the Rainbow Centre here in Jordan. Having a chat now to Ken. Now, one of the things that's fairly well known about you, Ken, is that you are HIV positive, and I think one of the first, or maybe the first, HIV publicly outed positive person in Hong Kong. How did that come about, and what did it feel like at the time when you let the world know that you were positive?
From the very beginning, I don't trust we can live until now. I know my situation. I know I'm HIV positive from 1995. At that time in December, I have so many symptoms, and then I go to the hospital. The doctor asked me to do the blood test and then get the result positive. So after 2 weeks, I leave hospital. I just hope I can enjoy to have a birthday party with my family members and some friends. These 14 years, I can go to so many countries, know so many new friends, and do something I think meaningfully. So
it's been very out of his expectation much longer.
As I was mentioning to you off air, I recorded an interview with another HIV positive local here last year, and he had the same comment that in the first years he felt as though there was no life, so he partied and had a good time, but realised after a few years, hey, hang on, looks like things might be going to work out for me after all. How did your family treat you after finding this out? What was their reaction?
I very surprised. They all support me, and even my schoolmates, my friends, every day over 20 people come to the hospital to take care with me. And then after the birthday party in 1996, I just tell myself I need to use the time I don't know how long to do something meaningfully. So I go to the four AIDS NGOs to be a volunteer, to start my volunteer work. And I always go to the school, go to the university to have sharing talk with the student talking about the homosexual and HIV issue. So when I meet Tommy Zhai in 1998, there is a Chinese Tongji conference, we call LGBT conference for the Chinese people, and we meet each other and know talk so many, and then we start to organize the Rainbow of Hong Kong, because I hope we have organization and do something for the young generation, and I hope in Hong Kong we have a new page in the future. So no matter I just think I enjoy every day and do something for the
you. I think, Tommy, you sort of indicated a moment ago, and and certainly from both of you, have sort of implied the somewhat radical nature of your personalities, if that's the right, or certainly the approaches that you take in trying to promote gay and HIV issues. Does it come naturally for both of you as being very outspoken and radical, or have you had to work on it, or you naturally want to be radical, if that's not a silly question?
It's different in between us. For me, it's quite natural. Yeah, I feel the pain and I want to voice out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and to be satire to myself, yes, I'm a media whore. But we enjoy. I do enjoy it, and I do found mm-hmm. that it's important to have the message out, mm-hmm. and always welcome to have the debate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we always have the conflict between me and Tommy. We have debates, and I always think he is
too radical
or too fast, and then I maybe slow down, want to slow down him. Yeah.
But I still have visions, Ken, of you with a loudspeaker, I think, in one of the well-publicised photos that we saw in the gay press in Australia, I think at one of the gay marches or something. I can see you with a loudhailer sort of getting people to listen to you or whatever. So, I mean, you're not exactly non-radical yourself, I don't think, are you? You went to a conference in, where was it, Toronto, if I remember rightly, which prompted you to get more involved in AIDS activism as well. What was special about that particular conference that made you feel you wanted to get more involved?
Is it, you say the AIDS conference in Toronto?
I think it was, yes.
2006. I just get a sentence, some wording from another AIDS patient. She say, in our society, we always have discrimination. If we wait for them to accept us, or they are ready to accept the minority or even the AIDS patient, we can't just sitting here. We need to do something. So we know why we coming out. We come out to the public. We are here. This sentence or this some wording let me think more about the identity. Because before 06, the past 10 years, I have two identity. When I do the interview with the reporter talking about the gay issue, I use my full name. But when I do the interview with the reporter about the AIDS issue, I just use the English
nickname.
So every friends, they know me, they challenge me why you have two
names
face.
So
when I go to the Toronto after the AIDS conference, I go back to Hong Kong, I think more and more, and how if I have 10 years more in the future. is it can stay here, stay this pawn, or I want after 10 years I have some improvement, or
a
I
leap,
can 100% be in myself.
Mm. Well, certainly, you're relatively well known in fact, both of you in Australia, because, as you probably know, we have a gay press in Australia, and obviously, news from Hong Kong, amongst other places, does get into the gay press in Australia. So, you will be known to a number of both of you will be known to some of our listeners in Australia. This is Alan Smales. You're listening to Orange Ribbon, and I'm speaking to Chummy Jai and Ken Jai.
You want choice? You've got it. Joy.
Joy 94.9.
Orange Ribbon Joycast. Sponsored by MyMac.
The best Apple computer, iPod and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.
Orange Ribbon, and I'm Alan Smales in Hong Kong, and talking to Tommy Jai and Ken Jai, and this time getting a little bit of background on Tommy. Now, you're born not in Hong Kong, you're from Taiwan,
yeah.
How did that come about that you ended up...
No, my mom was a Hong Kongese and my father was a Taiwanese.
Okay. So at what age did you move to Hong Kong?
12.
12. Okay. So just as a matter of general interest, how do you think of yourself then as Hong Kong Chinese, because you've spent most of your life here?
I've always been a Hong Kongese and I'm not a Chinese.
Oh, I see. You're out to your family?
Yes.
And what sibling? Do you have other brothers?
One brother, younger.
Younger, okay. How and when did the outing come about?
Yeah, that was funny that I was pretty active on when I was in university. I mean, gay activism. And the press are already chasing me. So my image is kind of like underground and secrecy, and I kind of don't like it. It's not good for the movement itself. So, and I... To be responsible, I think it's not very responsible that my mom found my identity on the newspaper. Even worse, what if some of my relatives read it and asked about my mom and she doesn't know it? So I kind of have a pressure that I have to either stop doing my activism or coming out to my mom before I'm on the newspaper. So one day, we have activities, and I invited my mom to come, and the activity was funny. I have a mother of a gay son share her experience throughout the years with her gay son, mm-hmm. from not accepting to accepting. So mm-hmm. my coming out story is quite fun, that my mom actually been trapped,
mm-hmm.
but so and to listen the whole night, and after that she got to ask about that mom. So I trapped my mom, but she was had an experience with really listening.
Now, you were also involved in student politics as well, in terms of gay protest groups or support groups or whatever it was at university.
Yes.
How did that start? Why did you get involved in that?
It was in the last year when I was in the university, and I found that I wanna. There wasn't any student LGBT organization in Hong Kong, not much at all, very small ones before. But in Taiwan, nearly all big new university have the sexual minority groups. So the big difference there. I went to Taiwan and have study all them, and come back to Hong Kong. I think I really want to hold my identity of as a student to have this moving. So I started it.
We've touched on this activism a few times during this discussion, but it seems to me that you've been in the press on more than one occasion on a number of rather outlandish activities. I mean, there was one occasion where you were chained in leathers or something rather to the central police station.
Yes.
What was that all about?
The police raid BDSM parties, which actually is a heterosexual one. There wasn't any sexual intercourse. It was only some BDSM place, and police raid all of them to the police station. So me and some of my friends, including Ken Jai, was like angry about police.
How long ago was this? Are we talking about?
I think it's 99.
Oh, is that far back?
Even
okay.
2000. Yeah, so we decided to have a protest.
And the company called Fitties.
Yeah, Fitties. Yeah.
Just on that topic, has the attitude of the police in Hong Kong changed? Would they raid a BDSM club now?
It never happened again.
Never happened again. No. What, because of the press outrage?
I don't know. Yeah.
And you also got involved in a marriage as well, which was well publicized.
Yes. That was the main reason. Is Rainbow of Hong Kong are not only an LGBT community center. We are mainly concerned about the grassroots LGBT. And the housing in Hong Kong is so high that most gay couples and lesbian couples do not get to live together. And public housing, used to apply to a public housing to live together, you need a marriage license. So we were not really asked for gay marriage, but when we make sure that we marry in the morning and file the public housing in the afternoon with our press release saying that two couples will get married, get public housing and swap our partners so gay people and lesbian can live together. That's the idea of what the protest we did. And we married in City Hall, Hong Kong, yes.
But did it work? When I say did it work, did you get the accommodation that you're after or not?
No, the public housing we'll get like many years later. We didn't really actually get it. But the idea and like the discrimination, the public housing is actually a privilege to heterosexual. All those ideas get out pretty well at that time.
Actually, I forgot to ask about the criminal that I'm speaking to as well. Don't you have a police record? Didn't that come out of the police
at the BDSM protest, we got arrested, so Kenji and I both got criminal record.
How did that feel at the time?
It is a war to me. At that time, it was worry. I don't care if I have a criminal record, but when several of my friends get arrested, I worry a lot. And the court experience was, I learned a lot, but it was painful as well. Mm. Yeah, especially watching if the record really affects my friends.
Going back a bit, I know we're going back 5 or 6 or 7 years, but there was also an issue. I think you were involved in a protest at a Roman Catholic church here.
Yes.
As well.
That was when the Catholic Church, their newsletter, official newsletter, condemning gay marriage in the world. So we got angry and felt that, yeah, they really step into our life, because like we cannot apply for public housing. It's really into our life. So friends and I decided we going to protest the church.
This is Orange Ribbon, Alan Smales in Hong Kong, and I'm speaking to Tommy Chai and Ken Chai.
Joy 94.9. Orange Ribbon Joycast. Sponsored by MyMac. The best Apple computer, iPod and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.
Alan Smales in Hong Kong, and you're listening to Orange Ribbon. I'm speaking to Kenny Chai and Tommy Chai. And just wrapping up the discussion with you, Tommy, you've mentioned BDSM a couple of times. You've had an interest in BDSM, and you were involved in that protest that we talked about. Where did your interest come from with BDSM, or how did it start?
Inside my body. And my skin, yeah, I'm interested on sex and different feelings around my bodies, and also connection and interaction between peoples.
There's not a very big scene in Hong Kong,
yeah,
is there?
There's no BDSM magazine. I think it's actually illegal by the pornography censorship, yeah. And so we dislike, we hate censorships, because the minority things get Yeah.
Oh, but you were mentioning before the group that got shut down by the police earlier was a heterosexual BDSM group. In fact, we didn't touch on it, but you're actually categorise yourself as being bisexual, by the way. You don't categorise.
Well, I did not go to that party. I actually didn't know that party before
the protest.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay. Anyway, let's move on and do some wrapping up on some general things in Hong Kong. How have things changed in the gay community over the last, say, 10 or 15 years in Hong Kong? How have attitudes changed? How difficult is it to get people out on the streets to protest, take part in pride marches? And presumably the Rainbow Centre has something to do with that, because you're sort of a core that can promulgate, publicise those sorts of things. But how have things changed, if they have changed, over the last 10 years or so?
You may see more and more gay or lesbian group create.
Yes, or getting out on the street, taking part in. I know there's been several attempts at pride marches, for example, and until I think December last year, it was very difficult to get people out. Whereas in December, somehow or other, magically, a lot of people came out.
The pride last year has 1,000 people. Yeah. I actually was very surprised. Like 10 years ago, there's less than 30 people can be out, like, on the media. But you know Pride, that everyone is taking pictures.
Yeah, after we organized 5 years Idaho program, so every year have 300 to 600 people come to Idaho. So we have 1,000 people
in the last year,
the gay Pride, yeah.
Mm. How has the Rainbow Centre contributed to that? I mean, what do you do to publicise things like Idaho Day and Pride March and so on?
Yeah,
how many people do you bring?
Every when we organise the Idaho and Pride Parade, we organise the meeting or volunteer training in Rainbow Centre. So Rainbow Centre link up all local gay-friendly or lesbian group or bisexual group or some transgender group to do a big event every year. And Rainbow Centre also get some students from the university. So we have some students, they learning the social work or sociology course. They have a placement, or they be an intern student in the Rainbow Centre. So we try to cooperate with the strict people together.
I guess what you're saying is that if funding becomes a major issue for your Rainbow Centre and it has to close again, what impact will that have?
Yeah, I think actually several organisations can foresee the problem of this closing, and we actually having a problem, so they are kind of helping and do fundraising. Or
we lost the education
a center for people to meet, and especially organizing or where to have activity. It may, when it closed, like many gay and lesbian organization may need to rent some rooms in some like university or other centers, but culturally, it's like it more feels like it's a heterosexual place. It's not much things on the wall that's culturally cohesive.
You know, every week we have some visitor from secondary school, the youth center, even the mainland China, some NGOs, they visit Rainbow and learn from Rainbow of Hong Kong, but we can educate each other to more acceptance the minority.
What about family attitudes in Hong Kong to having gay children? Has that changed over the last 10 years, or is it still the same?
We do have some parents come to Rainbow of Hong Kong.
Yeah, some members, they take their
somebody cheated their family member, bringing them here and have me deal with it. Help him to come out. So
I don't believe in Hong Kong. I think, do you know the group PFLAG, Parents and Friends of
Lesbian Yes. Children.
There is no PFLAG in Hong Kong, is there? Do you think there should be?
Somebody was trying to create it, but it was only like one or two parents and never got much bigger than that,
And talking about the Rainbow Centre, because it seems like it's fairly critical to trying to get numbers for all these other activities, such as Pride March in Idaho, how do you publicise the group? I mean, do you do sauna calls and dance bar calls? I mean, where, how do you hand out literature?
We hand out leaflets and we advertise on the internet and mouth of words and spread it through our volunteer, I guess,
What about other areas for people to come out in Hong Kong? I mean, I'm aware that you've got a telephone service, what's Horizons, I think it's called.
Yeah.
You've got, obviously, the Rainbow Centre, and you mentioned you were helping somebody come out to their parents recently. Are there other groups, other clubs that people can communicate that, aside from the commercial scene, not the dance bars and the...
Bars. We're now in Hong Kong. We have some online... TV or online radio program organized by gay or lesbian group. So we have online program on the website, online TV program. So many group or lesbian group or gay group, they print out their booklets and distribute to the secondary school or and the university for the education.
Talking about secondary schools and university, Tommy, you mentioned earlier that you're involved in activism at university. Is it common now for universities and maybe senior colleges or high schools in Hong Kong to have gay groups on campus?
I think there's none. The one in Chinese university has registered and it kept on for several years, but it's not active anymore.
No one will follow up.
And so I don't think there's any active LGBT organization in university right now. I do know some students, they are come out gay and active, but not in an organizing way.
I asked about parents' attitudes before to gays and lesbians coming out these days in Hong Kong. What about student peers, that is, straight students in universities and high schools? Is the attitude at that level changed now from what it might have been 10, 20 years ago?
I think before, when we go to the school to have a swearing talk about homosexual, we always asking the student, do you have the friend you know they are gay or lesbian? At that time, just maybe 20 to 30% schoolmate may holding hand. But when we ask the same question now, all class over 50 or sometimes maybe 80% schoolmate may holding
raise their hand saying that they know some gay or lesbian.
I think maybe more and more gay or lesbian, they come out to their schoolmates now.
But I think that's common all around the world. I mean, even in places like Australia, you've got a younger generation that's becoming more broad-minded, and they will ultimately become the politicians of the next 20 years or so, and so hopefully things will change, albeit not fast enough for you guys, given that you'd like things to happen much more quickly. Anyway, unfortunately, time's against us, so we might have to finish there, but I've been speaking to Tommy Jai and Ken Jai here in Hong Kong, two of the co-founders of the Rainbow Centre. It does need some funds. I'll leave some details on the Orange Ribbon blog. Ken and Tommy, thank you very much.
It's not good.
You did fine. Thanks very much. That's Orange Ribbon for another week. My sincere thanks to Ken and Tommy for allowing me to take a look at their Hong Kong Rainbow Centre and then taking some time out a few weeks ago to record tonight's interview.
The centre continues to struggle financially to fulfil its very important role for the GLBGIQ community in Hong Kong. If you'd like to find out more or even to assist financially in some way, then I've included some details on the Orange Ribbon blog on the Joy website. Thanks also to Nick for providing program support on the front desk tonight. Coming up next on Joy 94.9 is Simon and Paul with Global Sounds. Thanks for joining me on Orange Ribbon tonight. We'll be back again at 7 o'clock next Wednesday with more insights into our GLBT community here in Australia and around the world. I'm Alan Smales. From me for now, bye-bye.
Joy 94.9.
Orange Ribbon Joycast. Sponsored by MyMac.
The best Apple computer, iPod, and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.